Good afternoon and welcome to Mental Wealth on 103.2 Dublin City FM with myself, Brian Green. Over the next 28 minutes, we're talking mental health, where mental health matters on the radio. On this week's programme, while it is the silly season, that is a news season where politics is on holidays and just anything goes in the news that isn't political, here on Mental Wealth, we're doing the opposite. We're going to swim against the tide and we're going to go all political when they're on holidays. And we're going to dip into the archive of two quite interesting speeches that were made in the Houses of the Oireachtas during the lifetime of this government. And we'll be hearing from Niall Breslin, Brezzy, and his talk to the Joint Oireachtas Committee on Health and Children. And we'll also be hearing from Green Party TD Catherine Martin and her talk on mental health, a speech she gave in the Dáil, which is really interesting. That's coming up a little bit later. Also, coming up on future Mental Wealths, we hope to be talking very shortly to an amazing play that is on in Dublin 8. This is a date for your diary, the 10th of September at 7:30 p.m. in St. Catherine's Church in Thomas Street. This is a play called Bring Me Back Alive. It's written by Patricia McCann and it's all about confronting the tragedy of suicide in the community. It's sponsored by Sinn Féin and that date is the 10th of September, 7:30 p.m. St. Catherine's Church, Bring Me Back Alive. We will hope to have them on a very near future Mental Wealth programme. And also, hopefully next week, we'll be speaking to Brittany McIntaggart and her campaign called The Beautifully Broken Project. It was established in 2015 and it's a photography and story project around mental health. And we'll be talking to Brittany hopefully next week here on the programme. But as I've just told you, we're going all political. So stay awake now because for the next 20 minutes, it's a political speech. But not political speeches that should put you asleep at all because they're quite interesting and they're very pointed. First of all, speaking to the Joint Oireachtas Committee on Health and Children in 2016, Niall Breslin.
I would like to sincerely extend my gratitude for the opportunity to address the Oireachtas Joint Committee on Health and Children in relation to a subject that I am profoundly and unreservedly passionate about, the mental and emotional well-being of the youth of this country and how we can work together to build a more supportive and sustainable future for our children and teenagers. My passion is built upon personal experience. Whereas a teenager, I simply did not have the capacity to cope with an utterly dominant anxiety disorder that seemed hell-bent on robbing me of my character and personality at every available opportunity. Crippling insomnia, harrowing panic attacks, and incomprehensible self-harm dictated my life, all disguised behind a mask of normality that polarised the general lazy stereotype or label we associate with those with a mental health illness. The quiet guy in the corner, the guy with no friends, the guy who keeps himself to himself. I was none of these things. Yet I continuously failed to comprehend why I couldn't breathe some nights, or why my chest constantly felt as if there was a cavity block being placed upon it, while that perpetual rootless nausea became all too common part of my life. Some days I would sit in my classroom on the verge of fainting as I hyperventilated and fought for air while my teachers continued to teach the class, oblivious to the fact that one of their students was in the midst of a living nightmare. I spent so many of my school days praying that some of our teachers may talk about this, or just say something so I didn't feel so isolated and terrified. They never did. My greatest support and emotional scaffolding was the fact that I came from a loving, stable family, and I used to think that would, if I didn't have this, what could have happened? I really didn't want to contemplate that. Over many years, my anxiety disorder manipulated and sabotaged many careers and relationships like it tends to do. But I count myself lucky that I've always had that inner resilience to defy its grasps, and after many years of hostility and conflict with my mind, I've learned to control, respect and even strengthen its capacity to cope, done through dedication, sacrifice and a complete desire to regain control over an illness that could have been limited or perhaps prevented if I received effective and required education and knowledge around what it actually was. It was let grow into a monster, A monster that fed in silence, fear and lack of understanding. So why am I addressing this committee today? The reality is our youth, the future of this country, need urgent help. They are exposed to too much. So much is expected from them, and both the external and internal pressures they are being asked to cope with are simply not viable, and the result is the great epidemic of their generation. Agonising suicide rates, disturbingly high anxiety and depression rates, self-harm, eating disorders, OCD, the list goes on. We simply cannot ignore this anymore. We have to be honest and ask ourselves, truly, are we doing enough here? It's a transitional period in this country regarding the dialogue around mental health and emotional well-being. The draconian stigma that has ravished families throughout Ireland for generations is slowly eroding. The mass media are engaging with the conversation, while handfuls of schools and organisations are carrying the message to a wider audience and no doubt saving countless lives while doing so. We have gradually commenced normalising the conversation surrounding our mental health, and this must be promoted, nurtured and celebrated at every level. However, I truly wish I could stand up here and suggest that it's an entirely positive situation. I am not one for blurting out statistics, for I feel they often lack substance, and they don't tend to be evident in the stories I hear every single day on my website, alustforlife.com, in the countless schools and workplaces that I have addressed, and from the literally thousands of people that have emailed me over the past few months regarding their mental health challenges. In order for us to progress in this regard, everybody in this room has to be painfully honest with each other and accept that our mental health services and systems are not even close to being adequate or resourced for the demand that are, and requirement that are placed upon them. The people within the mental health services do Trojan work with the resources available to them, but their hands are unfortunately tied in way too many situations. This is not a blame game or a headhunt, but in order for us to build an effective long-term strategy, we have to park the egos, the politics and economics and put people first here. We have some incredibly gifted people in this country when it comes to education, mental health and psychology. So it's a matter of joining the dots, empowering and building something together that can give our youth the support they require to survive in this often chaotic world. I have witnessed firsthand some of the powerful work schools, students and charity and awareness organisations are doing up and down this country with little or no resource. And this is so uplifting to observe, but the reality is it's not systematic and certainly not across the board. As politicians, you are paid by the taxpayer to cater for the needs of the people, and in this regard, a lot of work is required. I have heard horror stories regarding the child and adolescent mental health services CAMHS that are almost too distressing to share on this platform. Families totally helpless, while some families have to drive hundreds of miles and wait months to see a healthcare professional. If it were any of your children, I hope you can see how utterly unacceptable that is. Although I am not a healthcare professional, I don't think you need to be to see some of the gaping holes in logic when it comes to our strategy around mental health. I feel whatever solution is reached, it will be done together as we all aim to achieve the same thing here. What would I like to see being explored? I feel we have to kind of look at this in two ways. We have to address primary preventative measures that can allow people to deal with their mental health issues at an infancy stage, build mental fitness and resilience, and also educate teachers and students in recognising how the mind, although it can be weakened, can also be strengthened. How can this be done? Well, firstly, rather than over-rely on medical models, create easy access to talk therapies and counselling service at a community level. The idea of a teenager having to be driven halfway across the country after waiting 2 months for a referral is totally unacceptable. A two-tier system when it comes to mental health simply doesn't work. Access to immediate and without charge should be immediate and without charge for every child and teenager in this country. Help in many cases cannot wait, and this should not be left to voluntary organisations and charities, which up to now have been the biggest support structure for many families. Reach out to those communities absolutely torn apart from suicide and support them in rebuilding their community by improving both individual and collective resilience by effective and focused mental health education programmes. Some of these points have also been echoed by recommendations made by the Children's Mental Health Coalition report chaired by Mental Health Reform on how youth services can be improved across Ireland. Two, let's explore the best solutions for implementing mental health and wellbeing into our education curriculum. Positive psychology programmes, mindfulness programmes, stress management programmes have countless evidence and researches illustrating their benefit to the well-being of teachers and students, but also how they can facilitate and actually improve learning, which makes you beg the question, why aren't we doing it? This is no doubt complex, but as a nation we have never shied away from progressive and brave social enterprises. Once the will and vision exists, this can be done. It requires leadership and the empowerment of our educators and our students. It also involves a much more integrated approach between our health and education departments, which could further facilitate developing relationships between healthcare professionals and our educators. We also have to recognise how our youth communicate and interact. Building a sustainable, safe and engaging educational online platform that can complement and support our current education system, although a challenge, must be explored. Our country is the technological capital of Europe, so access to expertise surely is not an obstacle here. Increased funding and support to those charities and awareness organisations that have long been the backbone of emotional support for the families and individuals affected by mental health illness and suicide. They are well respected and have a willing and engaged audience that trust and rely on their services. Long before people like me were having conversations like this in front of an Oireachtas committee, those organisations have been supporting communities and families throughout Ireland. They have a unique connection with many people, but often struggle for resources, especially over recent years. Remember that that recession we just faced was far more than an economic one. It was a human recession, where many families and individuals went through some incredibly dark days, and in many cases it was these organisations that held them up when everything else was trying to knock them down. We also have to address our mental health system when it comes to secondary issues and more serious mental health situations. Over the past few months, I have received a massive amount of communication from families of loved ones attempting to access our mental health services, and it would not be doing them justice if I said it made for pretty reading. This, I understand, is highly complicated and sensitive, but it's a conversation that we have to have. Only this month did I receive a deeply upsetting news that a young man, Quilcha, who was a family member of a friend of mine, was found dead in the River Liffey. He took his own life after enduring years of unexplainable pain. Many times his family tried to access help, but they were refused because the young man was consuming alcohol and told he could not be helped because of his drinking, which was intrinsically linked to his mental health illness. In a country that celebrates and promotes alcohol through its culture, it simply is not acceptable that someone is turned away from help on account of it. The family were even advised to take a barring order out, which no doubt would have been broken, resulting in criminalising this young man for being mentally unwell. Hardly something any mother wants to do to their own vulnerable child. His situation was complicated and seemed highly subjective to this family involved, but upon posting a story on my website, it became immediately evident that this story was not uncommon throughout Ireland. Mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers, all explaining similar painful and heart-wrenching stories. The details of this story are slowly going to emerge over the coming months, but this family don't want to play the blame game or point fingers. They simply want a change. They do not want to see other families have to endure what they've had to and will no doubt have to endure for the rest of their lives. No mother should ever feel this helpless, and they deserve so much more. Quilcha, an intelligent, witty young man, deserved so much more. He was anyone's brother. We need to ask hard questions here. Those stories are just too common. So many people wanted to help this young man, but their hands were tied by bureaucracy, vague legalities, and a lack of resource they should never be put in that position in the first place. This is not a quick fix, but in order to progress, you must first accept that change is needed. Irish people in some cases have shown to be revolutionary when it comes to social innovation, and I hope we continue to be in the future. We have proven that negative cultural attitudes can be transformed, and although we are sometimes cautious of change, we never let it dictate our collective actions. We are built upon unique character and personality, and we punch well above our weight internationally. We can become world leaders when it comes to our mental health strategies going forward. Let's work on this together. This is only the start of a conversation, and it is important that the next health committee prioritise mental health for young people as a key issue for its future work programme. And I appeal to you all to use your full influence, passion and desire to work together with us to tackle and overcome the issues we are facing and help build a more resilient society and a new Ireland. Thank you.
Powerful stuff from Brezzy at the Doyle Joint the Oireachtas Committee on Health and Children way back in, what was the date? It's here in front of me somewhere, January 2016. Now, staying in the silly season and mental wealth goes all politics, we move to another speech which was about 2 or 3 months later, and it's in the Dáil Chamber. And I don't know if it's her maiden speech or not, but if it was, it was a fine maiden speech. It said, newly elected TD Catherine Martin for the Green Party and she's talking about mental health and a vision for change. Have a listen.
Ireland's mental health policy, A Vision for Change, was launched in 2006. This document was heralded as innovative, exciting, progressive and inspirational. By positioning the service user at the heart of his or her own recovery journey, it promised a new and modern approach for citizens with mental health difficulties. It offered pathways through which our mental health services could be brought into line with best practice models from around the world. Vision for Change shifted the emphasis from institutionalism to community integration. It promised to offer the most vulnerable citizen a critical ingredient of recovery: hope. He or she could recover their good health and live their lives to the fullest. Our citizens would enjoy equal access to good quality services wherever they lived. The service user would be offered a menu of interventions and supports within his or her community and would be truly integrated into that community. He or she could strive towards living a meaningful life and achieve a true sense of belonging at home as a member of their local community, not in a hospital. Multidisciplinary teams delivering supports to individuals within their community would help destigmatise mental illness. The service user would be met at whatever stage they were on their personal journey to wellness. Embracing the recovery ethos, we looked forward to the modernisation of our mental health services and an increase in accountability, transparency and governance. But in truth, 10 years later, on from its inception, its implementation has been at a snail's pace. It is easy to be cynical. It can be said that it has been a case of more vision than change. This is not a criticism of the authors of this excellent document or the under-resourced health professionals of our depleted health services. But the truth is that the citizens with mental health difficulties and their families have been let down. The light of hope signalled in 2006 has almost completely been extinguished. We in this House must be advocates for the most vulnerable. We must be relentless in our pursuit of their rights to ensure that even within times of financial constraints and pressures, that our priorities are not blinded. The most vulnerable often cannot be an effective voice for themselves. But this should not mean that we ignore them and prioritise other areas for spending. We need to revisit the Vision for Change document and prioritise its full implementation. We need to restore hope. And Minister, we certainly do not need the shameful retrograde step of 12 million of the budget for mental health services to be rerouted to other areas of the health service. Mental health services should never be seen as an easy target. And when it comes to our young people, we need to think outside the box and be resourceful about how we engage them about their mental health. According to the My World survey, which was a collaboration between Headstrong and UCD, 70% of 12 to 25-year-olds say that with one good adult in their lives, they are connected, self-confident, future-looking, and can cope with problems. One action that can be taken quickly is to build on this, a reversal of the decision in Budget 2012 to remove the ex-quota guidance allocation in second-level schools. This has led to a reduction of 51.4% in the time allocated to guidance counselling services. Cuts to such services reduce the opportunity for young people to have that crucial, easy access to professionally trained counsellors. The ex-quota guidance provision in second-level schools must be restored. And if the will and commitment is present, the 32nd Dáil has the power Yes, this House can prove to be instrumental in making a real difference, in saying no more attacks on our most vulnerable citizens. It will be the litmus test for what is now described as new politics. And we should formally embrace at the highest level the evidence-based approach to mental wellness as well as treating mental illness. Some of the most vulnerable are vulnerable by virtue of the fact that they simply do not have the toolbox of skills to cope at a time of crisis. We need to sow the seeds of mental wellness within our families and our schools. The Department of Education and Science and the Department of Health should work together on innovative ways to reduce the incidence of mental illness and in the promotion of happiness and mental resilience amongst our children. According to research, 20% of children show symptoms of anxiety. And at a recent survey by IPPN revealed that family issues, neglect and mental health difficulties are proving to be the greatest challenges faced by schools. The same survey indicated that 3 in every 4 principals feel inadequately trained to deal with such problems as they arise. Schools in different parts of the country are doing different things. Roots of Empathy programme, NEPS, Pause B, school completion programmes to name but a few. But what is really required is a more standardised approach where all schools receive the same support and resources and where such excellent initiatives are formally adopted rather than squeezed into a very busy school academic year. School-based counselling is the norm in many countries around the world. We need to explore the feasibility of providing such counsellors in schools and in primary schools in this country too. We need to nip things in the bud. Prevention can be key. Let us lead by effectively showing more passion for prevention as well as supporting comprehensive strategies for treating mental illness. We need to establish research teams, design resilience-building programmes, train teachers and create new posts for specialist teachers in this area. In some secondary schools, we have excellent work taking place with Headstrong and Jigsaw, where vulnerable teenagers are targeted and their psychological needs addressed accordingly. Unfortunately, such programmes are sporadic and not available in every region. These programmes and initiatives must be further developed nationwide and properly funded. We need to consider designing and making similar initiatives available to primary school children. Alongside the full implementation of Vision for Change, we need a vision for sustaining mental wellness. Research is emphatic about the benefits of mindfulness in alleviating symptoms of mental illness. Innovative and overly stretched teachers are teaching its practice in some of our schools. In many countries, it has been integrated within their education system because of its potential to reduce vulnerability to mental illness. In the UK, over 400 secondary schools offer mindfulness meditation programmes. The Department of Education there has designated schools as pioneer schools for mindfulness teaching and have invested over £1 million to help other schools benefit too. A more uniformed and formal approach is key, where we move away from where mindfulness is squeezed into the day through the generosity of a teacher who has sought and paid for his or her own training to a system that trains all teachers and supports all schools. Our young people's sense of well-being should be at the heart of education. Ní hagan an óga figo, agus ní mórdún kivnu go rud lo cailach é inchin fósta, inchin dégóra, agus tá dúlgás orin suki canáta a cohu. Enough time with its lethal consequences has been lost. Too many years now where mental health has continued to be the Cinderella of our nation's health service. This is fundamentally a crucial test for society through its politics. we must not be sidelined or sidetracked into narrow party political concerns. And this makes the current delay of 60 days and more in forming a government all the more shameful. The soon-to-be Taoiseach and his government, if the will is there, can place mental well-being on the top of new politics. If the political will is there, it is easily achievable to lead effectively from the front and insist on the implementation of real positive changes to our mental health services. Mental health must be a priority of the next government. No more delays. In the words of Benjamin Franklin, you may delay, but time will not, and lost time is never found again.
Speaking in the Dáil on the 26th of April 2016, that was Catherine Martin, and all the points made still very relevant today. After the roaring success last week of reading a poem on the radio, I thought I'd add another poem this week, and this week I'm looking at the subject of mental health, as you would on the Mental Wealth Show, from the website familyfriendspoems.com. This is a poem by Emma called Signed Your Mind. Get dressed, love. You're going to be late. You look at yourself in the mirror, the one you really hate. Put it down, love. It's caused you so much pain. You're going to do damage. You don't want to be called insane. Stand up, love. Your tears make you weak. Wipe off that black mascara, proof of sadness upon your cheek. Take your pills, love. You must try your very best. Forget about your dizzy spells, the tightening in your chest. Chin up, love. No one can know your thoughts. You must act like you're happy, while your heart just sits and rots. Smile a little, love. Let me see those pearly whites. No one has to know what you thought about all those nights. Breathe for me, love. Your pain won't be forever. Take my hand and I'll take yours. We'll get through this together. Signed, Your Mind by Emma. And more poems like that at familyfriendpoems.com. Familyfriendpoems.com. This has been Mental Wealth on 103.2 Dublin City FM. If you've got any submissions for the programme, email mentalwealth@briangreen.com till next Tuesday at 12:30. Thank you for listening. Stay safe. Take care. Bye-bye.